Hi, I'm Shoaib Kutin, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Today, of course, the reform is in the air, and it's coming to the Royal Malaysian Police Force. Help me in this conversation. I have Ivy Josiah. She's a women's rights advocate and also a member of the Royal Commission of Inquiry into the Police. The exact title of that was, in fact, Royal Commission to Enhance the Operation and Management of the Royal Malaysian Police. Now, that was established on the 4th of February in 2004, which is 15 years ago. Also, to help us in this conversation, I have New Sin Yu. He's an advocate and solicitor. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here. Of course, the big issue is this five-letter acronym, IPCMC,
yes.
The Independent Police Complaints and Misconduct Commission. Ivy, before we get to the IPCMC, the broader question of reform within the police force, I mean, you were part of that commission again 15 years ago. Tell us, why was it necessary then? I mean, this was a Barisan National Government. Abdullah Badawi was the Prime Minister. He took this challenge up. Why do you think it was
that? But the former Prime Minister, Abdullah Badawi, when he took on the reins, there was a sense of openness, right? And at that time, we thought, the civil society thought that we can, you know, actually push for change. The perception by the public of corruption by the police was very, very, you know, was very dire. People just didn't have any faith in the police. Crime rates were going up, social ills, you know, white-collar crimes. So the police were really under a lot of fire, including deaths in custody, right? So at that time, because Abdullah Badawi was a little bit more open, you know, he announced that he's going to form a commission, and indeed he did in 2004. The commission was formed because it was a direct response to the perception by the public that the police were no good.
Okay. Yeah. Sinew, you advocate solicitor, I know you do a lot of work in, you know, criminal work, as it were. You know, your own experience of police. When the 2004 commission happened, you were still in school.
I think it was barely a child, maybe is a better way of putting it.
But having been a lawyer and still in your practice, the issue of the police and the necessity for reform, is that something that you feel strongly about?
Oh yes, definitely, especially in criminal work. I'll just give examples. When you lodge a police report, and that's something that everyone can relate to. And sometimes, after lodging the report, you wait for weeks, if not months, and you don't see any action by the police, and you start to question, hey, what's happening? So, under the law, there isn't much you can do. You can perhaps write to the police, they would give you a status report.
But this was a report back in 1 month, right?
In one month. But beyond that, there's nothing to compel them, or there's nothing to make them investigate. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what the reasons are. So maybe it's not communicated to you, or maybe it's not something that they would disclose to you. So you get very frustrated because your complaint went in, no results.
Okay, so the issues of a lack of efficiency, perhaps, mm-hmm. right? But there's also other problems, deeper problems. And you mentioned things
absolutely.
Like death in custody.
Death in custody,
maybe even
yes.
criminal activities by the police or members of the police force and so on and so on. I mean, what was the remit of this Royal Commission?
I think from the Royal Commission I learned that the Malaysians were hungry. They were desperate to tell someone their story. So I remember, you know, wherever we went to Perlis, went to East Malaysia, everywhere there were queues, Sharad. And they came forward. There was one particular case, you know, of death in custody where the parents had lost their child, their 19-year-old son, because he had committed suicide. He had hanged himself. And that occurred in 1999. They came to us in 2004 because they were not at peace at all. The boy was picked up, you know, in 1999 at 4:15. By 7:30, he had already, you know, committed suicide. Well, you know, the pathologist did say, yes, it is definitely death by hanging. However, it shouldn't end with the pathologist. What he had done was he had taken his jeans, put it around his neck, and the other leg of the jean was on the grill.
Yeah.
They needed to check to see other things. The protocols were not in place. For instance, could the grill hold a body in the first place? Why is it that, you know, that the body was taken down? Why was the scene of the crime, you know, was compromised? The arresting officer said, oh, he got the information from another officer to go and arrest him. And then later on in front of the commission, he says, there is a J file in Kota Bharu. But then he was in Nilai, this is in Kelantan. So
you're talking about the inquest process.
The inquest process and the J files. We kept saying, let's have a look at the J files. They never disclosed it. And that is why It's like X-Files, you know. That when people came forward, they kept saying, what has happened to my jewelry? I've given it, they have already found the thief, but why can't I get my jewelry? You know, what has happened to this investigation? Constantly, what has happened to a particular investigation they started? And there were incredible juicy stories around corruption.
Yeah. Okay, so we have inefficiencies, we have corruption, we have, I think, in this ongoing inquiry into Wang Kalyan, the death camps there, the possibility of police at least allegedly destroyed forensic evidence.
Yes.
So there's a lot of, there are clouds hanging over the police force. Why, you know, for you, Sinyu, I mean, was the work of the commission, and Ivy's got brought the copy with her, huge.
It's a huge copy.
Like
600 old pages.
Okay, there it is. You know, how important was the work that the commission did? I mean, how important is it to our understanding of the needs, at least in terms of reforming the police force?
I think one of the important issues that was highlighted by the commission was the need of an independent body to overlook the disciplinary, the discipline of the police. And they came to the conclusion, because there was such great public perception, like you said, against police inefficiency, against police misconduct, that in order to alleviate these fears, we need an independent body to check on the police. If it's just left to the police's own devices, a lot of misconduct or a lot of inefficiency, a lot of problems within the force, it will just be swept under the carpet.
Okay, in the minute that we have left, Ivy, you were part of a really powerful set of people who would come to kind of deliberate on these issues. There were over 130 odd recommendations.
125.
Yeah.
How many of them actually got put in place?
Well, you know, they claim that almost 95% has been put into place, but we don't really know, because there isn't a kind of monitoring body to see whether what has been put into place.
There
right?
is no monitoring body.
No, there isn't. I mean, the only thing that we can, the civil society can only monitor the complaints, not necessarily the protocols within the system. You know, are there, you know, CCTV cameras? Have they changed the investigation procedure? Are they arresting and investigating? I mean, there was a huge range of recommendations, including, you know, improving the welfare, the remuneration schemes. Because, you know, Shura, one of the things that I learned from here was that when we went into the commission, when we went to the police stations, I suddenly stopped being a civil society and NGO activist. I started seeing the broken chairs, the computers that were all completely in shambles, the places of residence where they stay was really dirty, and even to today, some of the places where the police officers live is really in shambles. So, you know, how can you feel good about yourself if you're living in, you know, in really in dirt and in squalor? So the police commission report is not only about complaints, it's also about safeguarding and making sure they have a good working environment.
Okay, right. So the Royal Commission to Enhance the Operation and Management of the Royal Malaysian Police. We'll take a short break. We'll be back after this. Stick to. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Ivy Josia and Anusin Yu. We're talking about the proposal to have an independent police complaints and misconduct commission, IPCMC. It comes out of this process. We were just talking to Ivy about it, who is a member of the Royal Commission to Enhance the Operation and Management of the Royal Malaysian Police Force. Ivy, you talked about not just the problems within the force, but the problems the force itself has. Lack of resources, their living conditions, and there was a promise to address all those. Now, if we could just focus on the IPCMC now, why was it necessary to look at a yet another mechanism, considering, as many critics of the IPCMC proposal say, there already is a mechanism for some sort of oversight?
There's an internal mechanism, right? And there's the EAIC, which was formed, you know, instead of forming the IPCMC, they formed the EAIC. Now, the problem with that is just recommendations, and then the police will choose to either implement or not implement. I mean, it's a very simple policy. You cannot police yourself. External mechanisms, oversight mechanisms, it's the way all over the world police commissions and are being formed. You know, in Hong Kong, when they formed a police commission, the police raided the police commission because they were so upset that they were getting information. Because you have access to a lot of information. You have access to, you know, because you want to know what actually do they have or don't have, right?
You're saying the police, the Hong Kong police force, raided
the police commission. That's right. In Australia, the police commissioner had to have a bodyguard with him all the time because, you know, you're going into the black market, you're going into gangsterism, you're going to find out who are the mafia bosses and so on. So it can be very dangerous. It is a very dangerous position to be a police commissioner.
Okay, I want to ask you this, though. You know, how much of the world, in different parts of the world, you mentioned Hong Kong and Australia, have already sorted out their best practices out there? Malaysia does not have to reinvent the wheel.
Absolutely not, yeah.
Are there best practices?
Yeah, we went to Hong Kong, we went to Australia, we went to the UK. So there are quite a number of places that already have in place. Taiwan has one. There are quite a number of places. We just want, because especially he could be saying that Malaysia is a country that's on a reform agenda. So we think this is very essential, that this institution. So yeah, all over the world, most progressive countries have an external mechanism.
Okay.
Oversight. And also you should highlight the fact that Australia, Hong Kong, we all share a similar legal structure and history. Mm-hmm. So the police force, it's quite similar in many ways.
Okay, I want to ask you this. I mean, okay, so we have the broad principle that you can't police yourself, right? I mean,
yeah.
The police, any institution
yeah.
needs an independent oversight mechanism in order for,
yes.
for a genuine oversight to happen.
Right.
But beyond that, I mean, have you looked at the IPCMC? I mean, what is it that's important to recognize about this? Because there have been all kinds of accusations leveled against the IPCMC. One is that it's unconstitutional.
Right. So the most important part of the IPCMC for me is that IPCMC can mete out punishments, disciplinary punishments, mm-hmm. for police officers, which is absent in the EAIC. The EAIC is another independent body, but the problem is that it can only offer recommendations
right.
to the police. Whether or not to follow the recommendation to mete out punishment, that would depend on the police themselves. And of course, then the whole problem becomes of whether or not there's any independence in that. And without an independent body to mete out punishment, there's going to be this gulf of public confidence, whether or not the police are acting independently. Are they biased? Or are they just trying to protect themselves? So that's a problem.
Okay, so protecting themselves is very interesting because actually I think that an expression is an idea, blue walls. I mean, the idea that, you know, the police force is a band of brothers and sisters, I guess,
well,
with women in it too.
I'm right? glad they, you're saying that
okay,
because there was actually a survey done during the commission. We
yeah.
did a survey. We interviewed 1,383 respondents among the police. 68.5% did say that they will lie to save themselves, which I think kind of like, I think most people will lie to save themselves. But the police are saying this, 68.5% will lie to save themselves, and 13.6% would lie for other officers. So I think, you know, and the survey
There's
also
a premium place on loyalty, isn't there? Loyalty
Absolutely.
Of the force.
I mean, it's a training, and like you said, the blue wall. You know, you do not let down an officer. You do not let down an officer. I mean, during the time of the police commission, I remember police officers coming in, sitting in front of us, and really almost the smoke was coming out of their noses because they were so angry that an ordinary person like me or, you know, all the other commissioners who are not police were asking all these questions, although we had two ex-police officers, you know, more than two, three police officers. They do not want to be questioned by a layman or a lay person, so to speak. So, yeah, they feel that they can look after themselves, they look after their own boys and women, and leave us alone.
They may not do so. They may not lie to protect themselves, but the public would think that they will be. So that's another issue.
Okay, so there's a trust
yeah.
deficit issue.
Yeah.
I want to ask you this. Putting the police in a political context, right?
Yeah.
The police have been extraordinarily important to the kind of authoritarian style of governance for all these decades under Barisan Nasional,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And has there been a kind of compact between the political elite and the police force that, you know, they will kind of scratch each other's backs? How do you see that? I mean, do you have your own analysis of the relationship between the police force and the political elite?
I think if we, let's take another example, Bersih 2 or Bersih 3. We see...
Or four.
No, but four, there wasn't really much police brutality, but two
five.
And three,
five.
It was well catalogued, well documented. And it was a political gathering, mm-hmm. and it was targeted at the government. So the question is, if the police force was acting independently, they should have followed the law, allow such a gathering to take place,
right.
and not act based on what the government of the day says, that this is an illegal gathering. So you could see that there's this convergence of politics as well as the duties of the police, and that becomes very dangerous because you are at risk of creating a police state, which is what we have experienced.
Okay, so this is interesting. I mean, Ivy, in your exploration as a member of the commission, did you sense that the police feel they owe their primary duty to the government
government of the day,
rather than to the public?
I think I got the feeling that their loyalty was to themselves first, to the force itself. And the IGP always felt he had to protect his force. And while having said that, you know, I want to say there were quite a number of police officers who did not snarl and snap at us. In fact, police officers did come confidentially and did report to us that there are concerns of corruption and so on, because they can see the corruption happening with their officers. So I want to just say thank you to those police officers. There are many good police officers out there on record. I want to say that. Yeah, there was a loyalty to themselves. And yes, of course, there's also a public perception. Or, you know, of course, the police have something on the Prime Minister, the police have something on the Minister. There's this public perception. And as long as there's a public perception, the rakyat feels they cannot trust the government to have to have an oversight mechanism to make sure the police are performing the work. If there's a perception there's some collusion, then we're already failing here. So it's only a mature thing to do for both the government and the police to say, we are going to be transparent. We will subject ourselves to external scrutiny, intense external scrutiny. That, for me, is a sign that we're truly democratic and mature. Yeah.
Okay, we'll take that up in the next segment as well. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back. I'm Sharad, and with me, Ivy and Sin Yu. We're talking about the proposal to have an independent police complaints and misconduct commission, IPCMC. Now, you know, I think there's something we've already touched upon. This, you know, the question of the loyalty of the force to itself, to the political leaders,
The
political leaders, and then of course to the larger public. I mean, and you brought the very interesting expression, police state. I mean, essentially how the police are a key component in authoritarian governance structures. Now, if we're thinking about democratizing, how can we think or rethink or reimagine the police force? I mean, Ivy, did the work of the commission touch on the question of what the future might be for the police force?
That it should be service-oriented, and that the central focus, as is in the report, should be a human rights framework. I remember sitting in the commission and the ex-IGP, Tan Sri Hanif Omar, said the central framework for the police work should be human rights. And I remember getting up and going, my work is done, that's it, human rights. And everybody was saying, yes, this is what we should do. You know, for the commissioners themselves, they were also realizing that human rights framework is the best thing to, you know, it's the only way we can make sure that, you know, the police function. So a human rights framework.
Okay, and was using you, I mean, the difference between the apparent adherence to laws and those kind of legal norms and a human rights perspective, do you see a distinction? I mean, what happens to the law when it has a human rights perspective, as it were?
Well, the problem with a lot of our laws is that it's quite outdated. So it hasn't been updated with all the new human rights norms and understanding. But like what Ivy said, it must be service-oriented because the state has a duty to protect wrongdoings against its citizens. Mm-hmm. And you can't do
protect
that.
Protect its citizens against wrongdoings.
Yes. Responsibility to protect. Yeah. And the state cannot do that without a police force that understands the human rights concerns and the laws that are in place to protect the citizens. Mm. So that is what I believe this commission tried to highlight, and which led to the establishment or the recommendation to establish IPCMC.
Okay, so we have a new IGP, Inspector General of Police, and he's already come out to say that he will push
for this.
He's welcoming it. One assumes that the structure of the force means that if he's in agreement, then it will happen. Or, correct me if I'm wrong, that they actually the police is actually a very complex creature. It's a complex organization that even if the IGP wants it, it might not happen.
That is true, as we can see, you know, even if the government wanted to ratify a UN treaty, The people apparently do not want it. So this is really important now in the next few months that if they're serious in, and they are serious about the IPCMC, they go down to the ground to explain to people how it will not only protect people, the citizens, but it will also protect the police. Because you want to surely fish out the corrupt ones. Surely you want to improve protocols. Surely you want to have a better image of the police person. You know, every time you see a policeman on the street and stopping a bike, you know, immediately our first thought is, he's out there to get, you know, some bribe, right? And it may be completely wrong. It's a perception. So I think what we need to do is convince the police force. That's really very important, to convince the police force. This is not a punishment. This actually will help them be better policemen, better force, and in turn help the rakyat. At the end of the day, when you took that oath to be a police officer, it's about protecting citizens. So I think a lot of work has to be done. It should be spread out, because there'll be some person, some group there will say somehow the IPCMC is against, you know, a particular group or a particular, you know, whatever.
God, religion, and the king.
I mean, Sabah, okay. I don't want to say this though.
I want to ask you this. I mean, the more people talk about consultation and sometimes criticize the Pakatan Harapan government for not being consulted on. But the question is, do we have to get every police officer on board before we put these mechanisms in place? Or can we just say, we'll have it in tandem, we'll have the consultation, but we still have to push ahead with those reforms, the institutional reforms that will allow for an IPCMC to be in existence?
The position that I've always been taking is that before you table any bill to the parliament for debate, you must open it to consultation.
Yes.
And you don't have to consult every single person out there who has an interest in it, but it should, the bill should at least be made public. What we know now is that the bill has not been made public. So there's a lot of conversations or murmurs, speculations that this IPCMC is to take away powers from the police, it's unfair to the police. So all that may not be true. What we have and what we can assume is that whatever bill the government is talking about should closely resemble what has been proposed by the RCI. And I personally feel that the police, they don't have to be so concerned, or they don't have to buy in to that rumor or fake news, like we have to call it, that it's going to take away powers from the police. And I'll tell you why. Firstly, the Constitution provides that the disciplinary authority, first and foremost, lies with the Police Force Commission. Mm-hmm. But Parliament may legislate a law to take it away and create an independent body for it.
That's right.
And such a law shall not be invalid. So there's a lot of people saying that IPCMC is going to be against the Constitution. That's not true, because the Constitution clearly provides for it. And guess when this particular provision in the Constitution was amended? It was amended in 1976.
That was foresight.
During Tun Hussein On's time.
Exactly.
So clearly, in Tun's wisdom, he saw that there's a need for an independent body to exercise disciplinary control over the police.
Okay.
And one more thing. Mm. There's also fake news that when the IPCMC says, okay, this person has to be fired, let's say, the worst case scenario, that particular police officer can appeal against the decision and go to court.
Okay, so the rumor or the allegation is that they would not have any recourse
appeal
to appeal.
Process and so on. Yes.
And you're saying that's not true?
That's not true at all.
Yeah. Okay. And on top of that, there's right to legal representation.
Absolutely.
There's right against self-incrimination. Hearings can be public or in private if you choose it to be. So all the basic safeguards to ensure that naturally justice is served and justice is served on those police facing the IPCMC is there.
Okay, and that is if the law that's going to be passed, or the reforms are based on these recommendations.
Yes.
The recommendations of the Royal Commission require from 2004
that's
that you were
right.
part of. Final word to you, Ivy. Are you hopeful that this will come to pass? I mean, that we will actually see an IPCMC?
I'm eternally optimistic. I mean, I've been doing this work for 30 years. You know, I am very optimistic, but I think we have also I'm learning lessons too, you know, as a civil society member, that we need to do a lot more explaining. We need to go to the ground. We need to talk to the police officers and not just, you know, I mean, yes, we can stop screaming at the police, you know. We have to convince the police that this is also good for them. And there are many good police officers who will come forward and say, yes, this is good. So we need to start getting, you know, our buy-ins. I'm optimistic. Of course I'm optimistic. Okay. And besides, we do have the independent media to investigate if it doesn't happen, right?
Right. Okay. Well, that's another story altogether. Okay, I've been very fortunate to have Ivy just here and Newsin Yu. We've been talking about the proposal to have an independent police complaints and misconduct commission. This has been Let's Talk. I'm Shura Kutin, only for Astro One.
Thank you so much, Ivy. Thank you.